evening and welcome to What Should I Watch, episode 30. It's a bit of a milestone.
Milestone in any young podcast's life when you get to 30
episodes. Third decade, I'm telling you. how are we doing, guys?
Good, yeah. Doing good. We've survived the Paddy's Day long weekend of last week.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a tough one. Tough on all of us. Did you see that scandal that's broken out now about some of the parade floats that were in Carlow?
Oh man, I was laughing my ass off.
So that, just for those who don't know, there was a, it's terrible. Like there was a,
yes, it's shocking, awful.
I know. There's a story in here in Ireland where a guy picked up his grandfather who recently passed away.
Like relation, yeah.
Like very recently, like in the last hour, and they wheelchaired him and then carried him into a post office where they tried to withdraw his pension. Obviously got caught. So anyway, there's some people in the parade depicting this scene. Could you imagine?
I certainly got people talking.
Well, yeah, I think there was some dude who's friends with him that got really, really pissed off about it. It's like hashtag too soon, guys.
I was a bit disappointed in the papers. They didn't actually show the floats. I, for one, would have liked to have seen what was so distasteful about it.
What they did show was actual pictures from the scene of the original issue, which is ridiculous. Mike, you missed out. I know there was no parade in your part of the country this year, but
I know. Yeah. I was sorely disappointed.
You're going to have to come over to the next town over next year because it was pretty spectacular.
Oh, really?
Cole John had to put to them.
Oh, really?
Yeah, wow. Cole John of these big aluminium shiny trucks that Mike loves to look forward to every year. But no, there was a local Case Tractors.
All right.
Oh my goodness!
Some shiny tractors.
Spectacular. No wrench blades even.
Well, next time around, maybe if they're on at different times, I could do both of them.
Double header.
So a chunk of our family was dancing in the parade in Dublin. So I was home alone with the rest. So we went to the local parade. Uh-huh. And what I was dealing with was like the 10-year-old boy didn't really want to go at all. So I was running some algorithms in my head where I was trying to figure out what's the latest I can leave where we have a chance of getting a decent place to stand to see stuff, but not so long that he or the 4-year-old would be bored out of their wits and start whinging, basically.
Oh, that's an age-old problem.
Yeah, so you're trying to find it. And then he started telling me, he said, oh, my friend X and Y have been there for the last hour and they've got a really good spot up the top of the main street. And I said, of course they have if they're there fucking an hour and a half before the parade starts. Also, they're losers. Don't be their friend anymore. So I couldn't really find. I left the house half an hour before the parade started.
Right.
So we pep talking the way in. And I said, look, boys, this could all go badly wrong. Right. I might hit a wall of traffic in a second. And if we do, probably not going to see very much. So just, put that into the old computers there and be ready. Didn't happen. Drove straight in. I'd say at that stage, everyone that was serious was already in town.
All right.
Yeah.
So we get in anyway and walked up to the main street.
So you're late for mass.
We're late. We found a spot where the older kids could see. And the two small ones, I had to pick them up when I went and came along. And I probably don't need to tell you, that gets tiring fast. So I would just one arm around one lad, one arm around the other lad, S grip, and then squat up stand up. And it wasn't too bad with the 6-year-old. Mm-hmm. But the 4-year-old could not sit still in my arms.
Yeah.
He was turning every which way. And every so often he'd want to cuddle. So he would try and wedge his hands in between he and I. And then he would lie on my head, which also not easy when you're trying to lift. So then the 10-year-old says to me, he said, can I go and look for a better spot? Because he didn't have a great spot either. He could see, but he didn't really like it. And I said, I said, look, I have a line of sight there of about 100 yards. So knock yourself out, go as far as that red on and down there. Mm-hmm. And if you've seen nothing, come on back. So he went down, came back. There's loads of spots down here, he said. So down we went. So we got down there and there was no place against the railings for the two older ones, but I was still left squatting and dropping the younger ones. And then this angel of a young kid left his spot by the railings. And I said, boys, now's the time.
Yeah.
The boys went in then, and they were against the railings. So they had options. Now they could sit in the footpaths, they could stand up, they could stand on the railings, they could climb on the railings. It's so many options. So that entertained them for the whole thing. And all I had to do was stand there by myself, which after carrying the two of them around felt like such a luxury. But the best bit was across the road was a pub, and at the barrier right across from us was this guy in a giant green hat. He's probably in his mid-30s. Steamboats, completely drunk, like. But he also, I suspected he might be drunk in town a lot because he knew everybody in the parade. And like, not just like shouting random things, he would know them. He would say, "Oh, Seanine, how's it going?" And then Seanine would come over and chat to him.
Yeah.
One stage, the best was he goes, "Porrick, what's the crack, hi?" And then this guy who was on a horse brought the horse over so he could chat to him.
Brilliant.
So the kids thought this was brilliant. Like, and then when there was cars coming along, he was going, rev it up there. So it was very good. I also taught the two young lads how to encourage a truck driver to blow his horn.
A vital skill to have.
Yeah, so they know it now. I got them to demonstrate it for their man when she got home. So.
Oh, brilliant. Life skill.
Every day's a learning day.
Sure. I would recommend... In order to better enjoy your Paddy's Day, try and get them in the parade. Then you can just fucking absolve responsibility.
This guy knows. This guy parades.
You know.
Brilliant. Yeah. Actually, I was hoping for a quiet one, but I got a call around 5:30 saying, "Steve, you have to be in the pub by 6:00. So...
ooh,
what could I do? You know,
Were you able to get any space?
I came back in here and I sort of said, you know, some of the lads going to the pub now, you know, around 6:00. And herself knew me well. And she said, "Is this your way of asking for a lift?" I said, "Well, actually, I was just thinking there'd be no taxi. So if it's been offered, sure, you know." Brilliant.
Very good.
Yeah. Ended up cycling home.
Actually.
Yeah. I won't tell you. I'll tell you later. It's a bit of an adventure. But anyway.
Nothing like drunk cycling.
Not the 10 miles, 2 miles. So anyway, I'll tell you about that later. Yeah. Anyhow. So what have you been watching? What was on last week? We had this spectacle, actually, Mark. Fill us in.
Yeah. Hafthor Bjornsson, the mountain from Game of Thrones. For 2019's World's Strongest Man, Eddie Hall, in 6 3-minute rounds of boxing. At least that's what it would be called if people in the ring were able to box, but they weren't.
Overhand right fight night. Yeah.
So here we go. Background, right? The background. I work with a guy who does this. Everything is no meeting can start until you get the background, then you set the context, and then you can talk. Yeah. So I apologize to everyone, but that's what I'm going to do now. So the background is in the World's Strongest Man 2019, the mountain was running second to Eddie Hall. And then the vent left. It was like a squat thrusters, I would call them, but they were using some giant implement, like lifting a cart with, I don't know, a half a house up on top of it or something like that. And the rules were very clear. You could bend your knees for the initial thrust, but you couldn't double dip. So once you got it up a little bit, you couldn't then bend your knees again and re-thrust to extend your elbows, right? One thrust only. That was fairly clearly explained in the rules. And I knew this because the commentators were talking about it a lot. And then because Hafthor was second, in World's Strongest Man, whoever's winning goes last. So he gets to see the whole field in front of him, which I think maybe it should be the other way around. But anyway, this is the way they do it. So if you're winning, you go last. You get to see how everyone else does. So Hafthor came out and he did it like a lot. Yeah, I think he went into the lead, so he did it like 10 times, say. I can't remember exactly, right? But he was no repped for one of his reps because he double dipped.
Okay.
So he did it 10 times and he got 11. Now, these numbers are probably not right, okay? But it's something like this. Mm-hmm. So then Eddie came out and you can see him on camera saying to the caller, what do I have to beat? And they told him, he said, 10 is winning at the moment. So Eddie did 11, right?
Yeah.
And then nothing was said at the time. But after Hafthor's sycophants got word of this, they all started going on, "He only beat you by one and you actually did that rep. So technically you should be World's Strongest Man, Hafthor." And Hathor, being surrounded by sycophants, believed all of this shite, and it created this big beef. And it was going, I asked them how many times I had to lift it. If they told me 11, I'd have done it 12. So, like, what are you clowning about? Like, anyway, that led to a long-standing barony between the two of them.
That's right.
Eventually, they, when they got through the whole, you know, my dad could beat your dad, they said, look, why don't we just fight like men in a boxing match? And they were meant to fight 6 months ago, but Eddie tore a bicep and couldn't. And it was rescheduled for last Saturday. And that was it. So
it was a poor display of boxing. Boxing didn't win that night.
No, it really didn't.
No, their pockets may... I thought their pockets would have won, but apparently it was all donated to charity, which I was delighted to see.
What?
Yeah.
Idiots. They don't make that much being strongest men, like...
The sponsors, those guys. Yeah, the strongest men these days.
Was my suspicion correct that they would gas after about 35 seconds?
No. The mountain was dry in the sixth round. Like most of them.
Wow.
And he could have done another three or four, I'd say. So Hathor is a lot taller, obviously. He's much taller. Mm-hmm. So, you know, anyone that knows boxing goes, well, Eddie's going to have to be slipping a lot to get inside. And then when he's inside, that's where he should do his damage, right?
Yeah.
Eddie obviously knew this as well, because in the first round, that's exactly what he did. And he won the first round convincingly, and he dropped Hathor, right?
Wow.
Then he got tired.
All right.
So when previously he was slipping things, in rounds 2 through 6, he blocked them with his face instead.
An age-old tactic, yeah.
He just couldn't slip, you know. And then every so often, Hathor would connect with something that would cave in a fucking mountain. And he dropped Eddie twice. Like, he beat him convincingly, you know. Like, the second round, I'm describing the second round now like a washout. It wasn't really. The second round was a bit more even than I'm saying. But 3, 4, and 5, and 6. Yeah. Those were all half-throw rounds, guaranteed. I'd probably have given him the second as well, to be honest. I think Eddie really only took one round. But that was kind of it. But Hathor just... So Hathor's not a great boxer. He's obviously inexperienced, but he worked on technique, like...
Right.
So everything's punches were all done the way, you know, someone who's worked hard on doing punches well for a year would look. So I was impressed with that. And then, like, when Eddie got tired and he couldn't manage to slip in, he changed into a weird stance where he kind of had one of his elbows kind of out in front of him upside down. And he's kind of going, this will defend me now from all of his strikes. And all I have to do is just get close enough to land my ticket, which is the right hand here. Which, of course, he didn't do, like, you know. But, yeah. God loves a trier, just not this particular match.
I heard they'd heavier than regulation gloves.
Is that so? That's interesting.
Is it a 14 ounce or something like that?
It was the heaviest fight in history.
Was it?
Yeah. Wow. The heaviest ever boxing fight in history, apparently.
Wow.
And it was like, I know it sounds really niche, but either Segi TV are fairly poor at their job, or it was really watched by a lot of people because the load crashed the site a lot.
Right. Wow.
Okay.
So I watched rounds 5 and 6 on the night and 1 through 4 the following day.
All right.
So.
Yeah. So it could lead to something, you know, like sort of freak show events.
You know, Titan weight, they called it.
Yeah, take you back to the glory days of bum fights. Do you remember that?
Japanese, what was it, Pride?
There is another one on the horizon. What's that guy? Ward, is it? He's fighting, you know, the Iranian Hulk, you know that guy?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
He has a boxer, Martin Ford, not Ward, Ford. The Iranian Hulk is fighting Martin Ford, which presumably will end fairly quickly in the death of the Hulk, like.
Martin Ford, he's the cyborg-looking dude, isn't he?
Yeah, yeah.
Massive. He was a kickboxer, wasn't he? As well as a bodybuilder.
He was something.
He was in some movies, too.
Well, he looks like a tough fighter, whereas Iranian Hulk looks like he's made really bad life decisions. Like. And they had a bit of a scuffle in some face-off a few weeks ago, and I think I've seen everything I need to see. Like, so, like, Ford shoved him, and he sailed to the far side of the platform. Right.
That's an ominous sign.
So Ford is probably just filled with fast twitch muscle fiber.
Yeah.
Right. Which
he was in Fast 9.
And then along comes the Hulk, and then of course to save face he was going to have to shove him as well, and he shoved him, showing that he obviously has muscles made entirely of fucking buckwheat or something, because it was so slow, and that is not a good recipe if you're going into a boxing match with somebody.
The Iranian Hulk is ridiculous looking.
He's stupid looking, yeah.
Sajjad Gharibi, oh my goodness, oh my god! If you haven't seen him, folks, Google.
He's worth a look. He's deliberately designed his bodybuilding routine so that he looks like the Hulk from Marvel.
He does, doesn't he?
And
he
the irony is, there's another guy who has done the same thing, and they want to fight. He's not here. He's not Iranian. He's from some other country, Peru, maybe. I don't know.
No, wow. When is it? Next month.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
So like Mountain could fight Ward after he becomes a murderer.
That's hilarious. Anyway, spectacles indeed. But they draw the crowd. You know, they're making money.
So severe. Like UFC London was on Saturday night then. And the main card, yeah. Oh man, it was just bangers. One after the other, amazing fights. Like,
who's the main night?
Marty McCann fight, Paddy the Baddy.
Oh, don't tell me anymore, because I haven't seen that one. I don't want to watch it. Yeah.
Worth to watch. Great. Yeah. None of the people listening came on to hear us talk about fighting.
Not one of them.
Pretty sure.
No. Maybe AJ. he's still hanging in there.
Yeah. Going to move on to maybe some Formula One or something. You know.
No, I better not start in that. Jesus, I honestly won't. I know the only time I'm going to bring it up this season is if there's something very spectacular.
Very controversy. Good man.
Okay. Otherwise, I'll just fill you in the top 10 qualifying and top 10. No, I'm joking. Okay, so what else we watch? We crashed.
I put this on the list thinking, Steve, that you'd be all over this.
Uh-huh.
Because it has that guy you like.
Jared Leto.
Yeah, Jared Leto's in it.
Oh, yeah.
Him and Anne Hathaway.
Oh, that's the person I like. They get confused. Thank you.
Maybe so. So Jared Leto plays this. He calls himself a serial entrepreneur. He's someone who is trying to get rich. And at the start of this episode, we see him heading in with great gusto and style into a board meeting that looks like it's about to go incredibly badly for him. Once they set that scene, they switch back to 10 or 15 years beforehand when he had nothing. He was starting to work his way up. So that was the first episode. So that's what it's about.
Hmm. I come straight out and tell you, I absolutely love this.
Agrabah, Steve.
Yeah. I love the characters in this. I love the writing in this. Now, I'm not a big fan of here we'll show you what's going to happen. And then, 3 days earlier, you know, or whatever, you know, that kind of thing. I know it's kind of have to bear. Yeah. So I saw an argument on this before, you know, a debate on it, should I say, sorry, just as an aside, where people say, you know, coming up next week, you know, at the end or at the start of the thing to show you in this episode, you know, if you're going, what the, I haven't seen it, spoilers, you know. But there have been studies done, and apparently it does make you enjoy it more if you know what the outcome is, despite not wanting to know.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
So this one is a true story.
It's a true story.
So
yeah.
I can't wait to hear Mike's review, but continue on anyway, you, Steve.
So
I read the newspaper that year, so I can.
I like the characters in this too. There wasn't anything I didn't like about this. It moved along quick enough that it kept me interested. It didn't dwell on any particular time or state that they're in. They alluded to a lot more fun than we saw that we didn't need to see. You know, we weren't spoon fed a lot of stuff.
How did you like Jared Leto's Tom Hiddleston's impression?
Did you think that's what it was?
He basically looks like him in this.
He looks kind of like him, all right.
For a second, I said, why is he dressed as Loki? Is this a costume party?
You remind me of that Australian piano player, actually. His name escapes me. I'll think of it in a minute. Just the kind of Robert Smith style haircut kind of thing at the start. But anyway, I loved his presentations. I loved the fact that he was a little bit nuts, had no shame and had loads of confidence and had the gift of the gab. I love that. I could watch that all day. Anne Hathaway was brilliant in this as well. She was looking stunning as always.
Right. She's modified the tone of her voice. Did you notice that?
I didn't, no.
I'm not joking. She's speaking in a deeper tone than she normally does.
Okay, that totally went over my head.
Like something in the Dropout, or is she actually copying the original person?
I've no idea. I just know that she speaks lower
all right, tone okay, yeah.
in this than she normally does.
All right, well spotted.
I liked her character too, because she was kind of quirky and so on, but no matter how committed she was to one, let's say, frame of thought that she was open to being corrected, or as we saw during the episode.
Yeah.
And I like the chemistry between the two of them. And yeah, I'm going to watch more.
Yeah. Right, Mike, tell us what people who've read the news think.
Actually, I didn't know the story in this one.
What? I must have taken the weekend off.
The first thing that struck me about this was that Jared Leto must have done some kind of fucking deal with Satan. I
know, right?
He's 50.
He is not.
He is 50. When he came on screen, I assumed he was like late 20s, early 30s or something like that. It's bizarre.
I didn't recognize him at first.
No, he's... No.
Did you think it was Tom Hiddleston? Me too.
Thought it was Tim Minchin. It was just because of the movies that we watched him in. We're just like, but that was fucking ages ago. You know, but he looks, the same, but he actually looks a bit younger.
Yeah.
Dead right. Yeah.
Whatever fucking moisturizer he's using, he could make his fortune off that.
Oil of Ule. The face of. Yeah.
But I really liked how he played the character. For me, what kept on hitting me across the face was Uri Geller. He had that sort of greasy Israeli con man sort of thing.
Continued, yeah. His Israeliteness was really, really good, I thought.
It was very, like he was so clearly a foreigner. In every interaction, you could see that his way of dealing with people was not the way that Americans are used to dealing with things. And you could see it raising discomfort as people aren't understanding him in various interactions. And they didn't go to town on it, but it was there. And I like that they made it happen without... going overboard with it. Very careful balance there, I thought.
When we give out the Watchies, our end of year awards, I'd imagine that the second best accent would possibly go to Jared Leto.
Possibly.
Yeah.
Anne Hathaway was strong as well. But there was a section in it that didn't gel for me. He's clearly a snake oil salesman, and he doesn't care what the idea is. He just wants to be rich someday. And Anne Hathaway sees through his bullshit straight away. She's no time for him because, you know, he's clearly a fucking schlemador. And then he does something completely out of character to help her.
That was brilliant.
But I didn't understand why he did it. He didn't have any.
It was for motivation. Her. Of course.
You don't think he can be a snake oil salesman and care about somebody else?
Yeah, and he knew. He knew.
Yeah, it was exactly the same kind of bullshit scheme that he'd have come up with.
Exactly. Yeah.
But after that, it's interesting because Anne Hathaway and there's another guy whose name escapes me, the architect, actually become like Team Uri if he's having any crisis of confidence or whatever. They just drive him on. It's like
Miguel, that's who you're talking about.
Yeah,
Miguel,
good angel, bad angel.
By Kyle Marvin.
Now, where I think it did suffer was by comparison to Inventing Anna. It's a shame it came out so close afterwards because I still have Anna's head voice in my head.
I think so basic.
Yeah.
I think it's closer to the Dropout than Inventing Anna.
I was going to bring that up myself, yeah.
Because it's more of an entrepreneurial than a just outright scam artist. Because he's not quite scamming people.
People do get something out of the deals he creates.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
Yeah, that is true.
But there is there's three of them we've just named. I mean, there's a bit of a rash on them at the moment already.
So it would have been nicer if you didn't have that context to compare them. Because you think this is a great episode, but did I like Anna more? You know, that is my issue with it.
Yeah. That's it. Anna had a few dodgy episodes at the start. You kind of had to power through episode two and three.
It took a while for the hooks to get in for Anna.
Yeah, that's true.
She was just sitting there in her fat ass getting 20 grand an hour. Not doing our job.
Yeah. So granted, I've only seen one episode of this, so it's not entirely a fair comparison. But I from what I've seen, I am enjoying it, and I will watch more.
Cool. Mark?
Oh, I think you've covered a lot of it. So it's the classic kind of TV that I like, and I think Jared Leto and Anne Hathaway do a great job of letting us know who these characters are. They're rich characters, and we understand them really quickly, thanks both to the writing and the performance. And then they kind of just do what they do, and there's a story forming around them. And I like that's the kind of TV I like. So I think Inventing Anna is better, but I don't think that puts this into a don't watch category. I think it's definitely worth watching.
Yeah.
You know, if you haven't read the news about what actually happened with
never going to get over that
with WeWork and the real Adam Newman. So yeah, there's a podcast by the same name. It's also called We Crashed that kind of chronicle this story in a bit more detail. That's apparently really good also.
Cool. Okay. We also saw Welcome to Flatch. This is at the other end of the spectrum, I think, in terms of TV.
Although, this is also a documentary.
Looking at Mike, I think he may have enjoyed it more than he should have. But anyway, so the blurb on it is, when a documentary crew sets out to explore the lives of residents in a small American town, their dreams, their concerns, it stumbles upon the Midwestern town of Flatch, which is made up of many eccentric personalities. So the story starts with two cousins, Kelly Mallett and Shrub Mallett. Who are, I don't even know what age they are. What age are they meant to be?
I'd say late teens, early 20s.
Yeah. Early 20s, late teens. Yeah.
They're not still in school because people are talking about how they've done nothing. So,
Yes. There's a few heads that you'd recognize in this as well, like Sean William Scott.
Yeah,
when Stiffs were showing up,
Father like, Joe. Yeah.
Come on, man, you're old. Time is awful.
But yeah, this is what do you call it? Mockumentary, comedy.
Yeah, it's like The Office.
Yeah, and a bit like the Australian ones that we enjoyed so much, Mike.
Summer Hill High.
Summer Hill High, yeah. But yeah, I don't think it's as good quality as that.
Yeah.
It's closer to Father Ted, but without as many laughs.
Yeah.
Especially the first episode. It's very like the first episode of Father Ted.
Well, it's in the genre of like Modern Family and The Office, where they talk to the camera, you know. Mm. And a lot of the time when one person is acting, the other person is reacting into the camera, you know.
It's based on an English show called This Country. I don't know if any of you guys ever saw it.
No. Did you see it?
No. I read that it had been based on it, but I had no context.
You read that TV show. Maybe that was when you should have been reading the news. And that's why you missed with Adam Newman.
Yeah. So what did you think of it, Mike?
It is up my street, I have to say. I love, you know, small town life on kind of the edge of civilization where nothing fucking works. And it's just a litany of failure in people's lives. And then, you know, Sean William Scott shows up and I was just like, no way! I fucking love that guy. But I take your point. It's not as funny as it could be. I And then while watching it, I was debating whether I should go back and watch that other one we looked at a few months ago, the Reservation, The Boys on the Reservation or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
Struck me as similar kind of efforts. So I don't know which one to spend my time on. It's probably more name recognition on this, so I might give this one a go first and then go back to the Reservation.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, it's Trailer Park Boys and all these kind of...
I don't think it's that standard. It was a good setup and it's a good scenario, but... Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
It's like a small acorn. They can grow into a mighty tree.
Let's just give it time.
Mark.
Yeah, like, it's funny because me and Donna were talking about small American towns and what it'd be like to live there. So we're talking about someone that we knew that was actually trying to get to Texas to play soccer on a scholarship. Anyway, we were talking about this and I was kind of telling what I knew about someone who lived in a small town in the States and all. And then I got home and turned this on. And it started off by saying, blah, 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 small towns in America. And I went, no way. We were just talking about this. So it started off. And like you guys, I went, Stifler, no way. And I washed it away. And I laughed a few times. And at the end, I went, you know what? That was actually good. But I think within a couple of minutes of putting it on, I kind of went, I think this is a bit stupid. I don't know if I like this. But then, even though I had thought that, I didn't actually fold my arms. And I found myself laughing quite a bit through it.
Okay.
So I think they do a good bit. There's a couple of really good, smaller characters.
Oh, right? Nadine.
Yeah.
Is that the journalist?
What's her name? Michelle Ortega?
Yeah. Big Mandy.
Big Mandy, brilliant.
It's very, very funny.
Yeah. They're brilliant hearing. It's just hilarious.
They've a couple of there's a couple of really small characters. Like you know the guy, the grumpy old man who was introduced at the start to. Like I laughed at him three times in that show and I think he had zero lines. Like there's a couple of things like that made it quite funny, you know.
The design of the show is kind of set up that they can have little characters like Grumpy Old Man just appear randomly through the series. You never get sick of them because they don't overuse it.
Definitely.
But it's potentially limitless. There could be 1,596 potential characters.
Because that's how many is in the town. Steve, I liked it. I thought it was funny. I thought it was well written, well put together. It's very well produced, you know. I also like the fact that the main character, Kelly Mallett, on IMDb only has one name. Her name is Holmes.
Oh.
No, respect.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Kelly Holmes? No.
I don't think it is. She did some acting as herself, so her full name is revealed.
Oh, I see.
But at the moment, she goes by Holmes.
Chelsea Holmes.
There you go. I think people should watch it. Where can they watch that, Steve?
The last gag in it, I thought it was very good and it kind of worked. You know, it finished up the whole episode.
That was the Grumpy Old Man as well, actually.
Yeah. It's on Fox, Mark.
And I don't think we mentioned that We Crashed is on Apple TV Plus. Is it Apple Plus TV?
Apple TV, you'll find it.
Apple Crash TV. Windfall. Let's talk about this.
Yeah, I'll dance with you, Red.
Somebody, go on. You dance with me there. Go on.
Yeah, that's.
I haven't seen this, so I have lots of questions.
This is
difficult to question.
Yeah, this is a COVID production. Basically, everything was shut down. So they got three actors together, said, right, we have no help for you. It's got to be really nothing in terms of special effects or sound or even writing to a large extent. So we're just going to leave you in a house until this time tomorrow and come back and see what you've put together.
What I thought it might have been, though, was someone like landed at the house where all this is filmed and went, oh, guys, I've got this amazing screenplay. I can't wait to get into the theater and rehearse it with you all. And then the lockdown happened. And they went, fuck. He said, but wait, we all have cameras on our phones, right?
Yeah. So to get back to the background, as Mark would insist upon, it's basically a rich husband and his wife show up at their holiday home. And when they arrive there, there is a gentleman in the midst of breaking in. And he is armed and he takes control of the situation and he decides he wants some money before he buggers off and leaves him alone. And it's basically the three of them in the house working off each other's paranoia for the rest of the movie.
Therein lies the brilliance of this. So when I put this on the list, right? And the opening credits, so the house is kind of a U shape.
Uh-huh.
There's a courtyard in the middle. And the opening shot is just a camera looking at the house across the courtyard, fairly close to it, like, and nothing else. And the credits just kind of roll behind it. And I was there going, oh man, I've made a terrible, terrible mistake putting this on. And then like one of the reasons I wanted to watch this is Jason Segel is in it.
Yeah.
Who
Jesse Plemons and Lily Collins,
who is in the funniest movie ever made, Forgetting Sarah Marshall.
Okay.
Which also features the funniest song ever in a movie, which is the one he sings as a puppet of Dracula. But anyway, I digress, right? Yeah, so yeah. I like him. I like him and the stuff he does. But in this, he's not that kind of a character at all. He's a thief, obviously. And he's, like, I think you hit the nail on the head there talking about everyone's insecurities and how they play out. It's another one of these. They've detailed out rich characters, rich in their depth, right? Not rich in terms of money. And then they put them into this setting where there's tension. And then the story, I did feel like wrote itself. Now, I liked this, right? But I can see all of the criticisms that Mike made about it. I was seeing those while I was watching it, because sometimes I think about what are the lads going to think about this? I mean, not when I put like amazing reality TV on. But for movies where you might be expecting something better, I do worry sometimes they let you down.
I like that he used the word better.
Yeah.
So it's split fairly well into three acts, and everything that they did, they could have done on stage, I felt, right? With any, even a tiny little bit of ingenuity, that they managed it on stage fine. And I think it'd be a pretty good play, to be honest. I think it would finish and the audience would just go, oh my God, I can't believe that just happened. And they would start clapping slowly and find themselves drawn to their feet, and the speed of their applause would increase. So I liked it. I don't think it'll be for everyone,
to be honest. I don't disagree with you. It would have been a better play. But in movie format, I found it very trying. The thing that particularly irked me was the lack of names. So they're basically, you have CEO, wife, and nobody. So that's instantly coming across as some kind of 1940s French intellectual. Oh, this is a representation of the man of the world. You know, it's like, shut the fuck up. Just fucking tell me the story, you stupid bastard. And then the, what do you call it? The tension I found was starting to make me dislike all of the characters ever more. The more I found out about these people, the less I cared about what was going to happen to anybody at the end. In fact, I was secretly rooting for some kind of asteroid to hit the building from space. That's the final denouement. But maybe that's just me. I have a distinct lack of empathy. It's just who I am.
Okay. I did like how they messed with, I suppose, the concept of victimization. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Through, like, I thought that was interesting. So they detailed out these characters, mm-hmm. and it's very obvious the two of them are being held hostage, like Mike described. But after a while, you start to wonder who the hostages really are. in the situation. I thought that worked well. But this is exactly the kind of thing you go to a play for as well, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
These kind of somewhat navel-gazing expositions, right? Mm-hmm. I think there's a tremendous payoff in the final act that is almost worth the price of admission.
A lot of people didn't like that final act.
Hey, what are you going to do? A lot of people don't like me, Mike.
Yeah, that was actually the highlight for me. Was me too, the ending.
I thought it was brilliant.
Yeah, it's, you know, in another otherwise disappointing movie, that for me was a bright light.
It sounds like we both liked it, Steve.
What should I watch this week?
Yeah, I would say probably skip it. Yeah, probably skip it.
Okay. Wait till it hits Broadway.
When the three of us are next drunk in a house together, I'd imagine we'll probably do quite a decent screenplay of this.
Very good. So rolling on to our last one is another TV series.
That was on Netflix, by the way.
That was on Netflix. And this one we're about to talk about is on HBO. Or HBO Max. It is called DMZ, starring Rosario Dawson. Does anyone give a synopsis? Or?
Sure. War has broken out in America. And there's been some kind of a...
Civil war, we should not.
Civil war, sorry. And there's been some kind of a ceasefire, but there's still hostilities are kind of there and thereabouts. And there's been a DMZ created in between the parties. And our main character has fled. It's very timely, this, with what's happened in Ukraine. But she was a refugee out of the DMZ and she got separated from her son. So as this episode kicks off, she's hatching a plan to try to get back into the DMZ, which, of course, going there is outlawed, so she can try and find him. That's kind of the story.
Hmm. What do you think, Mike?
Oh, this is a swing and a miss for me. I really like the way it's shot. It's quite atmospheric in terms of the rundown cities and whatnot. That is very good. I'll give it credit there. But the story itself is... Number one, it's missing the most interesting thing, was the American Civil War. I wanted to see what happened in that. not when, you know, it's over and you've got this DMZ thing going on. Mm-hmm. So what you're left with is kind of like, do you remember when The Walking Dead really lost all semblance of quality when they started bringing in, like, the characters are all supposed to be dirty, but they're remarkably clean.
You and your clean dirt. Jesus Christ.
They were just in a hospital, Mike.
it just screams inauthentic, you know.
It's hard to get good clean dirt done right, in fairness. That's right, you know?
That's right. Yeah. It's all about the spatter patterns.
You know? Oh, yeah, that's the build-up. It's the build-up. You can't just put in one layer.
I know. You need to almost be able to smell it.
Lauren Ridloff is the lady we're referring to here.
So they've missed the good options in the universe to tell a story, and the story that they are telling is just kind of boring. You know, it's we're going into this DMZ, and it seems like she knows everybody that's important there. And just happens to run into them like every 50 yards. Like, oh yeah, you're important to the plot. Yeah. Oh, hang on, I have to go and talk to Charlie. He's just across the road. Yeah. It was too many convenient encounters, you know.
Yes.
It really wasn't for us, though. This is my problem. Like, I agree with everything you said, Michael.
Yeah.
It was not the TV show I was expecting, right? So from the trailer, I thought what we were going to see was this great big creation of a post-apocalyptic dystopia, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
One fueled by war instead of, you know, mm-hmm. some of the other factors we know and love. They skipped all that good stuff, like you said. And then not only did they skip it, when they kind of go back to this place that should be dystopian, everyone's really friendly. And it immediately became some kind of drama. Like one of the big tension points is when she meets an ex-boyfriend of hers, mm-hmm. and his new girlfriend has a problem with it. And I'm going, man, that should not be a big source of conflict.
Do you not know there's a war?
Like, do you know what I mean?
Like, no, absolutely.
And I just immediately went into this TV show that I wasn't that interested in. And it didn't really advertise itself as.
And possibly the worst use of a time mechanism to build tension I've ever seen.
It's like,
What's going to happen? So what's going to happen when your countdown ends? Like, seriously, what is going to happen?
22 hours left.
Yeah. But she wasn't even if she acted with urgency, you could have felt that. It seemed to me like they were putting the clock on screen so that you would feel like there was
tension. Yeah, nail on the head.
Wasn't able to convey it in her performance.
No, she's sitting around chatting with people.
Yeah.
But she's not going straight to the information that she needs. She's actually having a chat.
Yeah. She does a lot of hanging around with the boys.
Yeah. She
should be getting shit done.
Yeah, exactly.
It was one of the points I wanted to make. The setting as well, which you touched on, Mike. The setting had great scope, right? You can tell great stories in a setting like that. And it's actually very similar in look and feel to The Last of Us, which is a TV show that's coming up in a few months' time.
Okay.
Which is a proper post-apocalyptic, you know, people got diseased and became zombies and we can have some serious crack here. But when she walked down a certain street, and I can't remember whereabouts it happened in the episode, and I went, man, that's straight out of the game, The Last of Us, the way it all looked. So they did a really good job in creating that, I thought. The fact that there's, you know, there's so much greenery around now, everything's overgrown and, you know, obviously overgrown because it's deserted with all the thousands of people that live there.
Whatever. Everyone has a pet wild animal. That's the other thing. I was just going, come on, really? Yeah. What, you've domesticated fucking cheetahs in the last 20 years? Come on. For 5 years. It's even 4 years, isn't it? What the fuck?
I want an aardvark.
Oh, come on. You know, some dude strolling around with a monster fucking forest wolf. You know, really?
Yeah, so such a swing and a miss. And even...
It really is. Yeah.
Like Rosario Dawson is normally.
She was the highlight. Yeah, exactly.
She's decent in this now, but flaws in her performance, I felt as well. But like normally, she's fairly reliable for being good stuff.
In the tunnel girl, right? Who is she? She was in something very recently that we watched, you know.
You'd have to tell me her name. Was it Venus? Is that her? Or Nico was who she was in the show?
I'm not sure. Okay. I'll have a quick look down through. Because we've seen her in several things. No, I don't see her there now. Anyway, it's a pity. Because she was very funny in the last one. Whatever. Yeah, doesn't matter. That we saw in last time. Yeah, so.
Yeah, so it's a don't watch for me anyway. I think, Mike, you're on the same page.
Yes, indeed, sir.
Yeah, I'm there as well. I'm just like, no, we're done. Thank you, Drive True. Next week, we only have one item chosen so far, and that's Halo, which is based on the game. So I'm sure it's going to be big, especially in Xbox camps. But this is a series
TV show of the anime, of the game, of the books.
Halo,
isn't it? Figures.
So this isn't a small game for those who aren't in the know. It's massive. It was the main staple on all Xboxes for several generations, I think.
Isn't Halo where teabagging originated and then spread to all other online players?
It's not, no. It was...
Mortal Kombat.
No.
It was one of the big moves at the end.
I can't remember. But it's one of those, it's like
Team Fortress.
No, it's not Team Fortress, but it's on the same engine as that.
Oh, really?
Oh, God, I can't remember.
I'll never forget the first time I saw somebody getting teabagged. I didn't know what it was, and I turned around and I asked the young lad, and then he explained to me. I just thought, that's the funniest, most humiliating thing I've ever seen.
We're not going to explain it right now. If you want to know, go and Google it. Yeah.
Or maybe don't. Maybe just
don't do it in work. Don't do it in work. Yeah. So on that note, I think that's all we have for this week. Yeah. Okay. So from Mike, Mark, and Steve, stay classy.
Stay classy.
Mike didn't bother us this time.
Didn't bother saying anything.